Okay, so this is the start of my presentation today. I want to start off with a question. Why do we want to study traditional indigenous medicine? One of the reasons is, you know, many plant species using traditional medicine may have novel medicinal constituents or properties. And those are some of the examples. For example, Compositae, which is a cancer tree. It has a potent compound called compositin, which has been used for treatment of many cancer. Hoodia, it's native to Namibia desert, and there's a strong interest to use this one as appetite suppressant. And even Paris Hilton used it one time, so it must be good. And Taxus, you know, it's known as a source of Taxol. And some of the compounds have been modified to make more potent compounds. But I also think it's important to understand philosophy and theory behind practices in traditional and indigenous medicine, because it may lead to a discovery of new use of plants or way of healing. And I have a couple of examples there, and one of them is vinca. You know, Catharanthus is a bedding plant. Catharanthus has been used in TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, but people are using this as anti-diabetic. But they found compound, you know, vinca alkaloids that was found to be a potent leukemia drug. So I'm going to briefly talk about Native American herbalism. Dana did a good job, so I'm not going to replicate anything. But anyway, they have a strong tradition of using native plants in healing. One thing I found interesting, which is happening across culture, is they also use non-native species. I think she talked about peppermints, which is not really native to the United States. But some of the examples include burdock, chamomile, garanga, and so on. And there's a great diversity in types of plants used preparation practices. And she was talking about fumination, so that could be really different from Cherokee tradition. And as you can see over there, there's something called medicinal wheel. And native tribe people believe those four elements have to be balanced. It's kind of quite contrasting to some of the medicine system. For example, TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, they believe in yin and yang, so they have two elements. Ayurvedic medicine, they have three elements, but they have four elements. So they have different philosophy and approach, and they believe the power of the spirit that governs the plant cures the ailment. It's not a compound or power or whatever. So that's one of the reasons healing rituals such as involving physical and spiritual cleansing are really important to Native people. And she was talking about loss of medicinal knowledge, but it happened in some other cultures too. And this is a map of Tears of Trail. And as you can see over there, for example, Cherokee people, they still reside in Georgia, Alabama area, but they're forced to move to Illinois, some other area down to Oklahoma. Of course, plants growing in Oklahoma are quite different from plants growing in Georgia. So, traditional knowledge, medicinal knowledge, is closely linked to plant species. So that's one of the reasons in some cases, medicinal knowledge has been lost. But we are interested using North American species. So what can we do? This is one approach. It's analysis of floristic similarities and its use. What is floristic similarities? The basic means, different species, similar species, occurring in different areas. In this situation, East Asia and eastern part of North America. This may happen, one time there's maybe common ancestors or something, but some of them die because due to climate change. But as you can see, there are some of the species in Eastern Asia or eastern part of the United States, they survive because of similar climate. And of course, some of the species are medicinal and using a similar manner. So again, cross-cultural reference too. So one thing I'm going to suggest is, taking a look at East Asia, and looking for species, something related to species, looking for medicinal property or properties action, and find something related to eastern part of the United States. I want to briefly talk about ginseng. And many plants actually called ginseng, but some of them are not really ginseng. But some of the examples, for example, American ginseng, that's actually real ginseng. Chinese ginseng, it's species occurring in China, but it has a similar property, and sometimes it's used in a similar way. There are some other species like Sanchi ginseng, Siberian ginseng, Indian ginseng, and so on. But there is something common for those plants. It's used as adaptogen. And I want to briefly talk about history of American ginseng, because this is kind of interesting to me. And Chinese ginseng has been used in northeastern part of Asia for thousands of years. And it's been over-collected, so it may be extinct in nature. But anyway, in 1700, French Jesuit priest in China kind of theorized maybe ginseng might, ginseng may be found in you know, French Canada because climate is similar. So somebody started looking for ginseng, and surprisingly, they found ginseng in Montreal area. And ginseng became one of the most important commercial commodity for Canada and North United States trade with China. But you know, she was Lena was talking about kind of biopiracy issue, and I think this could be one of the example of biopiracy to me. Anyway, so I want to talk about six or seven genera that have some potentials. And this one is called Coptes or Coptitis ghost rat. And Japanese name is Oren, and Coptitis japonica is one of the major medicinal plants in Kanpo, which is a modification of TCM. It's native to eastern part of Asia, and it's been used, the part used is rhizome. It's been used as bitter anxiolytic for vomiting, diarrhea, upper body inflammation, and three major components, phytochemical components, barberin, coptisin, and hydrastin. As you may have noticed, hydrastin is one of the major components in golden seal. There is a species native to eastern part of the United States that is called Coptitis trifolia. It's been used by native people to relieve canker sore, but in addition to it, the Aragon people use this plant for diarrhea. So there is a similarity here. The Iroquois people also use this plant for vomiting babies. So there are some similarities going on. This species is also native to eastern part of Asia, but rarely used because lower potency. Phytochemical constituents, those are quite similar. They have all three components, but the ratio is different. But as you may know, you know, plants of different local area or genotype may sometimes they have different properties or chemicals. So I think that's one of the plants which is interesting to investigate. So the next one is called Dicentra bleeding heart. One species native to Japan, northern part of Japan, which is called Dicentra peregrina. And it's sometimes referred to as like queen of alpine plants because it's so beautiful. And in some area, like in some mountains, it became extinct because of harvesting, but not because of its beauty, because it was a really good medicine for stomach problem. Two species are native to eastern part of the United States. One is Dicentra canadensis, the other one is Dicentra cucullaria. They have been used to a certain degree, but I couldn't find any record. And one of the reasons maybe people think those are poisonous. They contain lots of alkaloids. That could be a problem. But I do think they may have some potential because one of the species, as I mentioned, has been was used in Japan for a stomach problem. The next one I want to talk about is Magnolia. Those are two major species that are used in Kanpo TCM. One of them is Magnolia kobushi, which is native to Japan, Korea, China, that kind of area. And they collect flowers for treatment of sinusitis, headache, expelling mucus, that kind of stuff. And there's another species called Magnolia ovobata, and it's native to Japan, and bark is used, and it's used for diuretic, cold medicine, and so on. Magnolia species is also native to the United States, and those are some of the examples. Magnolia grandiflora, macuminata, and virginia, and so on. And properties, and that's something I got off Dr. Duke's Phytochemistry and Ethnobotany Dictionary. It's been used by native tribe. For example, Huma people use for decoction leaves and twigs for colds and chews by Huma people. So there's a similarity here. Pharmacological studies on constituents have been done, and one of the study found the extract to be antimicrobial and antioxidant. But one thing I want to mention is phytochemical constituents of these plants, American species, are quite similar to Asiatic medicinal plant, medicinal magnolia species. So I think there's a lot of potential to investigate, or maybe they could be used in some other medicine system, like a TCM or Kanpo. Scutellaria, I think that's a good example to show, you know, contrast between them. And Asiatic species, Scutellaria bicalensis, which is native to Siberia, Mongolia, China, that kind of area. Roots are used, and it's been used for fever, inflammation, stomach ache, and diarrhea. But in addition to it, it has kind of mild sedative property. Those are phytochemical constituents, as you can see there. There's one species native to eastern part of the United States that is called mad dog. 5 more minutes? Okay. Scutellaria latifolia and related species. The name came from the fact Native American used for treatment of rabies. Pharmacological studies of constituents have been done, and phytochemical constituents are quite similar to Asiatic species, so there could be a possibility for these plants to be used in Adam medicine system. Smilax, there's one species native to China, Himalaya Dakar area, and it's called Smilax glabra. And it's been used for treatment of skin disease and skin conditions, so on, but it's been also used for as general antidote. There's one species native to southeastern part of the United States, which is called Smilax lorifolia. It's been used by native tribe people in a similar way, for example, as a wash for burns and sores by the Cherokee people. However, I couldn't find much record on research or anything, and I couldn't find anything on pharmacological studies of constituents or phytochemical constituents. But I do think that this species may have some potential because related species in Asia has been used. So this is the last species I want to briefly talk about, and it's Persimmon. Asian Persimmon is native to China, maybe Japan, we don't know for sure, but Japanese use Persimmon leaves to make a tea. It's been used for seasonal allergy and blood vessel health and also hemostatic. And phytochemical constituents, proanthocyanidin or tannin seem to be the biological active component. One species native to eastern part of the United States, that is called American Persimmon. And it's been used by native tribes, by Cherokee and Arapahoenok, and so it's happening in different tribes. There's one study I found, there was a study on pharmacological study of constituents. They found out the extract was inhibitory against drug-resistant tuberculosis bacteria. So I want to briefly talk about a study I have done. It's a phenolic content and antioxidant capacity of American Persimmon. I selected 5 cultivars of American Persimmon, and Persimmon growers tend to be smaller, so I had a problem with replication. Basically, I selected 50 stems, and I washed them and dried them with paper towel, and I put them in a microwavable Ziploc bag, and I steamed, and that's how I made tea. I roasted them on an electric skillet. I used 14 shakarate acid to quantify phenolic content, and I used flavic acid to measure antioxidant capacity. So those are cultivars I use, as you can see here, and basically compare American Persimmon tea phenolic content and antioxidant capacity of American Persimmon tea to those of green tea. What I found out was phenolic content was a little bit lower than green tea, and antioxidant capacity was about half of green tea. But there's one cultivar called Jomrik, and I thought phenolic content was kind of comparable, and I don't have a data to present. But basically, black tea, phenolic content, antioxidant capacity are a little bit lower than green tea, and those numbers for Persimmon tea are quite comparable. And many people talk about green tea as kind of panacea. It's good for, it has anti-cancer property, anti-diabetic property, lowering cholesterol, and so on. But green tea has lots of issues. For example, it has lots of oxalate, so it can be a problem for somebody with bladder issue or stone. Green tea also has caffeine, so that can be a problem too. It also has tendency to accumulate fluoride, heavy metals, so on. Most of green teas and black tea are produced outside of the United States, so there's an issue with pesticide contamination. So because of those reasons, I think American Persimmon teas are viable or healthy alternative to regular tea. So this is concluding thoughts, summary of my presentation. And I'd like to acknowledge one person. I'd like to acknowledge USDA for funding part of my project. And I'd like to acknowledge 2 people for sample donation. Any questions?
Could you just go back 1 slide?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Maybe I was too quick. I had it finished. Yes? No, it was difficult for me to find a replication of same cultivars because Persimmon growers tend to be smaller and trees are kind of smaller, so it wasn't enough. I didn't have enough samples.
Yeah, because one thing I did notice that I work in phenolics too, uh-huh, is that they have to be harvested at the same time.
I did.
Because, yeah.
And I processed same day, so it was really painful. Sometimes I was working on 5 o'clock a.m. I'm still trying to finish making tea. So I did, yes. Any other question? Yes.
You mentioned tea from Persimmon. I didn't catch it. Did you say the leaves and twigs, or
Actually, new shoot. The question is, what part of American Persian I use? The answer is new shoot, which includes stem and leaves. Just like a green tea. Yeah. Yes, any other question? I'm done. Okay. Yeah, thank you.